I always say an engineer does not want to be going and trying to find where there are issues or find where there's concerns. They want to be focused on coming up with innovative ways to solve those problems. And so you're really taking out some of the worst part of our job as engineers, trying to go find them and really focusing on the value-added tasks
Yeah.
for the project.
Welcome to Digital Innovations in Oil and Gas with Jeffrey Cam, a podcast for industry professionals who are transforming the industry using digital. I'm Jeffrey. And in this show, we look at various digital innovations that help lower costs, improve productivity, and reduce emissions. If you want to discuss this show further or just stay in touch, you can contact me on Twitter at Jeffrey Cam or at jeffreycam.com. In this episode, I'm in conversation with Scott Moosbacker, who is the Systems Integration Business Unit Manager at Vista Projects, an engineering, procurement, and construction company based in Calgary. Construction engineering is critical to the oil and gas industry because the industry is so capital intense. Pipelines, refineries, tanks, processing plants all need complex engineering to make them functional, safe, and cost-effective. Scott is helping to reimagine the interface between the build phase of an engineering project and the operate phase. How does the information generated in build play a role in operations? Scott first appeared in episode 187 of Digital Innovations in Oil and Gas, and you might want to take it in. Here's Scott. Scott, welcome back to Digital Innovations in Oil and Gas.
Thank you very much for having me.
So it's been a while since we last caught up. Going back into the records, I think about a year, and so much happens in the space of a year. But just to rewind the tape for everyone, we spoke last time about the possibilities of applying digital innovation specifically around data and information management in the capital construction cycle for oil and gas, as a way of improving the cost structure of such projects, handover, improving commissioning, and then the use of these data assets. Of course, this is still for the industry was a bit of a novel way of going about it. But just to kind of catch up to where we're at, what's transpired in that time? If you could kind of highlight some of the, you know, the top points that you talk about with organizations or what's going on, what are the sorts of things you would highlight here?
Sure. Yeah. Like you said, we've been working really hard on developing some of these data-centric environments through the project execution phase. And what we're really focusing on now is helping bridge the gap between project execution and moving into commissioning as well as operation maintenance. So it's preparing all that hard work that everyone's done to have, you know, a really nice digital twin to bring it into the operations and maintenance phase so that they can take advantage of it there as well for the next 25, 40 years of the project.
Yeah, I mean, this poses all kinds of opportunity, but also all kinds of problems. Like, why would the industry not have done this in the past? What were some of the barriers that would have blocked, say, the use of that capital asset data that you would have collected and then turn around using it in the long term for ops and maintenance?
Sure, yeah. And as we start to move into this industry 4.0 environment, typically people have not had the information and data at their fingertips to be able to use and bridge into operations and maintenance. So kind of the first problem is it hasn't existed in a readily accessible form for people to do so. The second is when you move from project execution and commissioning into the operations and maintenance environment, it's typically a different cast of players. There might be a few that continue on, but it's ultimately helping bridge the gap and understanding what we have is actually a very great foundation for leveraging into operations and maintenance, that it's educating those individuals what's available for them to help, you know, so that they can leverage that information as they move into that phase of the project. And it's really critical for them because there's so much information there that they can access. It's just helping them understand and contextualize it into a way that is beneficial for them.
But typically on a construction project, you know, the data that you're collecting about the asset you are building is collected for the purposes of the engineering firm who's building the asset, not necessarily structured in a fashion that makes it even useful in an ops and maintenance world. I learned this firsthand in Australia when one of the major LNG projects had four major EPC contracts engineering, procurement, construction contracts to construct the gas wells themselves, the transmission pipeline to the coast, the gas treatment plants in country, and the LNG facility. And four different engineering firms, four different engineering standards, four different taxonomies, four different, like so they had to build a fifth layer on top to just kind of integrate the whole thing. And it just turned out to be very, very challenging to do. I mean, this is still the world we're in, or are we finally getting beyond this?
I think we're finally getting beyond this. One thing that we've really been working hard with our clients on is bringing in the individuals that are going to be operating and maintaining the facility on an ongoing basis early on into the project so that they are able to contextualize the data in a way that works for them. So when we are doing our construction work packages, we've also got a sight line into how are the systems going to be operated and maintained so that we can have that data inherent in the establishment of these data-centric systems so that there is not a big gap between trying to remap all this information and objects over to that new kind of environment that operation maintenance works under. So it's, you know, what we've also seen through some of the work that we've done with advanced work packaging and looking at these different facilities as part of systems rather than just as stick-built designs is also facilitating that movement to understanding not just individual bits and bobs within that facility, but also how they fit within the overall plant and how they are being used. And that's where, you know, when we are looking at commissioning systems and preparing for the commissioning and construction phase, those actually leverage really nicely over into the operation and maintenance because you are looking at it as a operating facility when you get to that phase.
Yeah, so it's not beyond just the original design, if you like, but at a much sort of different and more granular level. I think your point about bringing people on board early is really key. The one of the risks, though, is that the opportunity to revisualize or reimagine how you would run the facility may be lost if the individuals coming on stream want to simply drop the facility into the legacy way of doing things. In other words, all of the innovation and creative things you do in construction, you end up having to park to the side because the customer has quite rigid, traditional, not very advanced ways of moving forward. How do you work around that so that, you know, the value created through these new information assets is not lost?
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest challenges that people have when we start going down this path is they struggle to understand what a system like a digital twin might look like as you move into operation maintenance. There's a lot of, you know, really high level instances out there that doesn't really get to the heart of what that could look like. And so the way we try to demonstrate it is by actually having demonstrations of sample data sets for a facility that shows what it looks like in each phase of the project. One important thing is that because when we are developing these kind of systems together, at different phases of the project, that digital twin might actually look a little bit different, even though the underlying data is the same. So when you're in project execution, the key performance indicators are going to be different than what they look like as you move into construction and commissioning. And again, they look different than in operation and maintenance. And so helping people understand what they are going to get and be able to put their hands on what a digital twin might look like in operation maintenance is really a critical piece of the puzzle to getting them on board to what they need to see. And that's typically what we try to do is show how we can provide that value to those operation maintenance based on what we've done in the past.
Yeah. Bring it to life for them in their context, in their way of working so they can see how this might bring some incremental value. What is their reaction when you show them, you know, imagine your ability to revisualize your future world because you've got the data. Like, what is their reaction? Are they skeptical? Are they keen as mustard and want to get on with it? Like, where how do they land? Because, you know, to a degree, you are in essence saying to or showing someone a potentially dramatically different way of doing things, but they know they've got this legacy model they're wrestling with.
Yeah. And I think typically they are really keen based on the sales, you know, brochures that are out there. But once we get them into even actual demonstration, the skepticism starts to diminish, you know, fairly substantially once we can show them based on, you know, our sample data set, how this looks. In addition, we don't always pay a you know, really rosy picture of everything that is going to be super easy along the way. There's going to be certain challenges. There is data quality issues. There are data integrity issues that need to be addressed along the way. So, you know, helping frame that as something that can certainly happen to be addressed during the project execution helps alleviate some of the concern. I think a lot of the people that have seen some of these implementations, they see what it looks like when you try to convert like a brownfield implementation that's existed for 50 years.
Yep.
That's very difficult. And it's certainly, we're working on some of those that can be done. But if you bring them in early on some of these greenfield projects, where they have a say into how things can be organized and conceptualized together, it really helps enable them seeing how they could gain advantage in it. And it's also talking a little bit about where are their trouble points in different facilities? Where are the challenges they have? And so it's running through some of these use cases where we've helped address similar issues for other clients in the past that helps them really understand how it can benefit them, not just on a day-to-day basis, but a long-term strategy basis as well.
Can you tell me a story or an anecdote about, you know, where you, how you bring this to life? Like if someone's listening to this podcast, they're, you know, we're talking fairly conceptual here, but you know, let's make it real for people. Tell me a story about where, you know, you're following these new concepts and the kind of the light bulb went on for someone. I said, holy, sure, man, we could do this.
Yeah, it's actually a fairly simple one. So located here in Alberta, we typically have regulators that come out to the facility at a fairly regular basis that need to understand what's going on in your facility and be able to put their hands on documents that are available. And they need to be up to date, up to speed. So, you know, one really great example is for pressure safety valves in our facilities. When the regulators come out, they need to understand how frequently that particular safety valve has been maintained, if it's been tested. And in a typical facility that I've had experience with in the past, when those regulators come out, they give you a couple weeks, and it's typically a big scramble to try to find the documentation, the maintenance records, the data sheets, and all the information about that particular valve. And there could be hundreds of them that they are coming out to check on that you need to have prepared. In the environment that we have today, when those maintenance records become part of a system where you can easily access that information and you can be confident that it's in real time, all of a sudden, there's not a big exercise that you need to go through to try to find these records and scramble to, you know, in worst case, potentially come and get them pop tested again to make sure they're in good shape. You've got that information readily available. The amount of time that you have to spend to gather it is infinitesimal, especially when you can bring in, you know, a regulator and show them through this digital portal what you've got, and it's all readily available at their fingertips. And it just gives them the confidence that you are maintaining your facility as required, and typically the level of scrutiny that you might face might be a little bit less, showing that you've got that confidence in data, right?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. If you inspire confidence because your record keeping is rock solid and your data is readily available, the regulators will be express that confidence in speed to get back to business as usual and leave the facility back to its operations. So yeah, big plus.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think another big example of where we've seen this be really popular in the past is when you're out and there's been maybe some sort of small failure within the facility, whether it's been a heat exchanger or a pump or something like that. Again, the typical exercise is let's go find the maintenance records, let's go find the data sheets, let's go find the operating manual on this book to be able to understand maybe what needs to change, where's our inventory for replacement parts for this. And it's typically looking at, you know, either trying to find it in paper records and binders or in multiple different systems. And what we're talking about here is one web-based interface that people are able to go to that brings in data from multiple different areas into one spot. So again, the ability to respond quickly to some of these, you know, potentially very expensive downtimes at your facility is substantially lower because the ability to respond fast is certainly there.
Yeah, there's a case example from Woodside Energy in Perth with their Northwest Shelf project. They quoted this at the LNG 18 event a few years back, that as much as 40% of their total engineering time prior to figuring out how to bring digital innovations to the puzzle, 40% of their total engineering time on the platform was devoted to the data scramble. Go find the data. Where are the records? And you get into a big facility that's been running for a long period of time, that case of Northwest Shelf, 1989. The accumulated information about the asset is enormous. And you know, which record is reliable? Where did it come from? Where was the last time you looked at this particular piece of equipment? What's its entire history? It's just a huge manual effort trying to get your head around this, and all solvable with these new tools.
Certainly. And that's what we see, especially for a lot of the brownfield engineering that we're doing. We estimate, you know, working with our clients, that potentially 25 to 30% of the overall effort on some of the smaller brownfield pieces of work is in just trying to find reliable records that can be edited and updated to address whatever brownfield operation you're trying to do.
So I get the operations end of it, but how much of that ops and maintenance task is actually reliant on the original data that came in during the EPC construction and sourcing? Like I can get the procurement side, because you want to know where the asset was purchased, from whom, what's its warranty state, what are the specifications? What about the other kind of the engineering design as designed data where does that factor in here?
Yeah, so typically what we consider is that 15 to 20% of all data from the engineering phase of the project is operationally significant. And so what we do is we typically set up our systems to be able to serve those up immediately, forced to anyone that wants to go look into the particular object within the facility. So the idea is those records will always be there and they'll always exist in that format. But it's almost a configuration around what does a person care about at that phase of the project. So, we always advocate that all information should be readily available within a few clicks of a mouse. It's just whether it's one or two or three to get there.
Yeah, but I think that's a really interesting number, 15 to 20%. But it might not be obvious which of the 15 to 20% at the get-go is actually going to be ultimately really interesting to operations. Is that fair? Or is there, can you say definitively at the time when you finished FEED, front-end engineering and design, this is going to have to make its way all the way through to ops and maintenance because it's critical? Or do you not know until further down the track?
I think for the most part, we have a fairly good idea of what those are. Certainly different facilities that might have more aggressive expansion or debottleneck plans in the future, that number of operationally significant documents might increase.
Could be bigger, yeah.
But typically, when we look at all of the drawings that are being created out of engineering, we typically have a really good idea of what that needs to be.
Yeah. So it's a huge, great challenge for the industry. And I'll use LNG just as an example. Most LNG plants make money only after you expand them, as it turns out, because you don't need to rebuild the jetty. You don't need to build tanks. You don't need to do your offsites and utilities. Your laydown yard's already there. You probably have a place for the work crew to live during the construction. All that gets reused. So you don't have to pay twice for it. So your expansion is very lucrative. But you can see an enormous amount of what was actually constructed should be flowing over into ops so that you can run it and then want it when you want to go do your debottlenecking so you can see what actually was constructed.
Exactly. And it comes back to, you know, from our perspective, we certainly want to serve up those operationally significant documents and data first. But for some of our clients where they want to essentially replicate a facility again, it's important to maintain all of that data on the back end. And it's not just the end documents. We want to really focus on the data that creates those documents. And so I always like to joke that there are often people like to replicate facilities, but when you actually get to it, you're never actually truly replicating something. Something's changing. The feed's changing. The feedstock's changing. The end product needs to tweak slightly. And so by taking this kind of approach, we're able to take the underlying data and change that so that it's reflected across all of the documents. And as you are probably aware, there is data within the system that exists in multiple different places across multiple different documents. And so when you're working in kind of this data-centric environment, rather than trying to change the individual documents that those data exists on, You're changing the underlying data structure.
Yep.
It's actually way quicker to do that replication process.
So this implies, and I might be reading too much into this, but I'm sensing that the engineering business or engineering firm that thinks about the world in this way, actually may be more efficient at delivering engineering content. Not only is it just the quality higher, but the actual effort it takes to generate the diagrams, update documents, et cetera, you're actually more efficient. Is that a fair conclusion? And if so, how much more efficient do you think the engineering business is as a consequence?
Yeah, no, that's certainly the point or the position that we've seen as well. When you are leveraging this database style environment to understand where there are potentially quality issues, when I say quality issues, typically where quality issues tend to reside is when you've got, you know, this piece of data that exists in multiple different spots.
Yeah.
By leveraging databases to understand where there are differences between those between the data and those different native tools, you're able to actually just focus in on correcting the data rather than finding it. In the traditional sense, you used to take, you know, your yellow highlighter out and highlight, you know, three or four times over the course of the project to make sure everything's in sync as you're progressing through kind of the design phases. Now we're able to leverage these quality analysis to focus in on those particular changes as we go through. And the other side of things is we're able to leverage the data to make more real-time decisions on the project when there are decisions that need to be made around costing or schedule. Because the data that we're working with is being served up to this digital portal on a, you know, very regular basis. You know, we update MTOs, we update all of the key metrics on a daily basis. It is much different than these 6-week lagging indicators along the way.
Yeah. What's an MTO? That's a term I don't know.
Oh, sorry. That's a material takeoff. So for example, if you've got a facility that has a bunch of, you know, piping in it, you need to understand to be able to purchase a takeoff of that. So how many elbows do I need? How much pipe do I need? How many different manual valves do I need? In a traditional sense, you would essentially create that manually from a 3D model or from the P&IDs or isometrics. And it's a very time consuming process. And now in this kind of environment, you're generating those very quickly, typically overnight. You're using your pre-configured systems to create those for the estimating team so that decisions can be made.
Yeah. When I was growing up, my dad sold heating and ventilation equipment. Light industrial use, so little warehouses, et cetera. And I remember watching him, and late at night, he'd have these enormous sheets of blueprints on the kitchen table, and he's there with his yellow pad and his calculator and a highlighter, and he's going through counting all of the ceiling vents he was going to have to provision. You know, and that was, he was doing an MTO, material takeoff, and he called it a takeoff. So the language, this is 50 years ago, I'm going to say. Like the world, much hasn't changed, right, in how you do this. But on the other side, that's now press a button, poof, there's your all of your joints, all of your valves, everything just on the list for you.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're right that what's required in the end is still the same as it was 50 years ago. But the techniques and the ability to generate them quickly is certainly what's fundamentally changed in the last little bit.
Yeah. Now, we're in a world right now, actually, I'm just thinking about constructability of assets where, you know, supply chains around the world are under great strain. The transparency and visibility into supply chains for us in our home life is rubbish. So things disappear off store shelves and then they're gone for weeks and then suddenly they're back. You know, someone in the background is working hard to get that supply chain back up. How is this impacting the engineering world for significant asset construction? Where and how does these kind of tools help you keep a supply line for constructability actually working correctly?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So in these kind of tools, what we're able to do is get two different main advantages. The first would be in generating these takeoffs, we are generating them very frequently. So we understand as you are moving through the progress or through the process, you understand how things are changing. And it's really important because the length of lead time that you need for a lot of these materials is getting longer and longer, as you said. Exactly. It's really important to be able to identify that as early as possible. And so in this kind of technique where you're generating material takeoffs and you're able to proactively identify when some really long lead equipment has been added by the design team, you're able to change and modify your order so that you de-risk that schedule as much as possible and potentially the costs coming down the road. The second advantage of these kind of systems is that rather than existing in, you know, your expedited team working within Excel spreadsheets where things are generally as organized as they can be, but certainly not ideal. By operating within these systems, you're able to more proactively identify when there are shipment errors that change over the course of the expediting process and make alternate decisions based on, do we actually need to change how we've designed this to accommodate something like this? Do we need to change some of our piping or especially valve to accommodate, because we can't have one valve impact the startup time of our facility because it's some materials are
back ordered or what have you.
Available.
That's right. Really fascinating, because this creates a whole new way or point of leverage for de-risking time schedule and budget, because you now have visibility into the data. But more importantly, you actually freed up engineering time to just go and ask and answer these questions, right? Without adding incremental headcount onto your project, because you now have the tools doing some of the grunt work for you.
Exactly. And like I always say, an engineer does not want to be going and trying to find where there are issues or find where there's concerns. They want to be focused on coming with innovative ways to solve those problems. And so you're really taking out some of the worst part of our job as engineers, trying to go find them and really focusing on the value-added tasks. For the project.
Yeah, right. I'm pretty confident you'd see some morale improvement when you you say to somebody, guess what, I'm about to blow your weekend apart. You're going to have to go do a gross manual task. And that world might have disappeared now for some of these kind of jobs.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, like I can think back 15 years ago when I was a junior process engineer and having to go through P&IDs and line lists. And there'd be hundreds or thousands of lines that you need to go through. And it would take you literally weeks to do so. And by the time you finished, stuff has changed again and you need to almost start over the process in a few weeks. So it was not an enviable task, something that we're trying to help avoid and really help accelerate the starting of people's careers.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, you get to the get to the end and guess what? You have to start all over again. It's like, oh, exactly. Really? I'm thinking there may be a value story lurking in here too, which is imagine you wish to sell down some assets and you're able to sit with a buyer and bring these information assets to bear. So in other words, you're not sending them a container load of paper at the end of the day. You're actually going to be able to prove to them that the records are there, the records are kept, the regulator's happy, it's easy to navigate. How does this play into value? Can you actually monetize a sale at a higher value position, do you think?
Yeah, I think there, especially for, we've seen a lot of M&A in the oil field industry over the last while. And I think, from my perspective, if you're evaluating two different facilities, the ability to come in and understand what you're getting and B, how you can ultimately add value to that potential property is of immense value. And it's, as a purchaser, it's something that I would really want to know at the outset and during my due diligence. And so I see a huge increment of value in these digital twins to be able to understand exactly what's going on in your facility and understand what I'm actually getting as part of this. So I would agree. There's a lot of value there.
Yeah, I know that there's a couple of refinery purchases I'm aware of where this is not that long ago, but the old brownfield refineries, because they haven't built too many new ones lately. But you know, the transaction included three container loads of paper.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Here's what you're getting. And what you're hoping is you get to keep all the people because they probably know, you know, more about the plant than and able to tell you which valves are concerning and, you know, which equipment is, you know, suffers the most frequently from failure. They're going to have all that in their heads. And so you're going to want to keep those people for that. But you know, the world we're in, it's getting harder and harder to count on that. So you really, these information assets are really becoming much more critical because they are a substitute for wetware, for people you're not going to be able to retain or attract to your business.
Exactly. And I think, you know, with these big capital acquisitions that are going on, anything you can do to potentially de-risk this acquisition is certainly advantageous along the way.
Yeah. Scott, it's been a fascinating conversation catching up on what's happening with this. It's clear lots going on. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast today.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. Talk to you soon.
Yep. That was Scott Moosebacker, the Systems Integration Business Unit Manager at Vista Projects from Calgary on the transformation of engineering information management. I think the story about the regulatory visit really highlights the value of better information. No fire drill to collect data about the asset. It's all just there, always available, and very current.
Thanks for listening to the Digital Innovations in Oil and Gas with Jeffrey Can. This podcast can be found everywhere podcasts are available, including Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, Google, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find all the resources and links mentioned in the episode in the show notes, and you can listen to the previous episodes at jeffreycan.com. If you have a moment, please leave a review and a rating on iTunes as it helps others find the show, along with other great content. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Digital Innovations in Oil and Gas. The podcast returns in a week with another episode, so stay tuned.